हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो श्री भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 2 अधिकरण 1। भक्ति इज ऑल ऑस्पिशियस रूम्स ऑफ सिंस एंड देयर रिएक्शंस। सो देन आचार्य इज कोटिंग ए भागवतम वर्स। How astonishing! The outcast on the tip of whose tongue your name appears becomes the guru. All those who chant your name, becoming most respectable, have completed all austerities, all sacrifices, all bathing, and all study of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 333.7. Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the previous verse, a person who has once offenselessly chanted the holy name of God becomes immediately eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices. One should not be astonished by this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. One should not disbelieve or think how by chanting the holy name of the Lord one can become a holy man to be compared to the most elevated Brahmana, right? Because to think like that is also one of the offenses to the holy name, right? Either think it's an exaggeration, I think that's the sixth offense, or to think that the, you know, or seventh offense, and then to consider it to be like Karkanda and all that, and it's just an aspect mundane piety. To eradicate such doubts in the minds of unbelievers, this verse affirms that the stage of chanting of the holy name of the Lord is not sudden, but that the chanters have already performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and sacrifices. It is not very astonishing, for no one in this life can chant the holy name of the Lord unless he has passed all lower stages, such as performing the Vedic ritualistic sacrifices, studying the Vedas, and practicing good behavior like that of the Aryans. All this must have first been done, just as a student in a law class is to be understood to have already graduated from general education. Anyone who is engaged in the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, must have already passed all lower stages. It is said that those who simply chant the holy name with the tip of the tongue are glorious. One does not even have to chant the holy name and understand the whole procedure, namely the offensive stage, offenseless stage, and pure stage. If the holy name is sounded on the tip of the tongue, that is also sufficient. It is said herein that Nama, a singular number, one name, Krishna Rama, is sufficient, right? It's not that they're doing so much or there's just one name. It is not that one has to chant all the holy names of the Lord. The holy names of the Lord are innumerable, and one does not have to chant all the names to prove that he has already undergone all the processes of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. One chants only one. It is to be under the examinations, not to speak of those who are chanting always, 24 hours a day. It is specific yam, unto you only. One must chant God's names, not, as the Mayavadi philosophers say, any name, such as the demigod's name or the names of God's energies. Only the holy name of the Supreme Lord will be effective. Anyone who compares the holy name of the Supreme Lord to the names of the demigods is called a Bhashandi or an offender, right? So then that'll be the second offense, right? So then that's the point, is they won't get that there. That says one name, not that they're regular chanting, just one name itself. So that means one in the life of the devotee who is, you know, always engaged in devotional activities with you know, some association and some study of the Vedas, study of the Vedic literatures, understanding the philosophy, then, you know, they're chanting one name, you know, so many times in a day, thousands and thousands of times. So this, that they'd be pointing out one name is just that person who has said, because people go down, the devotees go down the street, Hari Nam, how many people chant? Right? So that one who chants, then, you know, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, he's the best in the crowd. You know, so that it's a unique thing. It's a special thing because of the potency of the founder Acharya and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we see that so many devotees are taken kind of pretty normal, but actually it's something very, very unique, right? Something very unique. So it has to be appreciated that that potency is there in the name. And if we doubt it, means then, you know, how will we fully take advantage of the benefits that are to be gained? The holy name has to be chanted to please the Supreme Lord and not for any sense gratification or professional purpose. If this pure mentality is there, then even though a person is born of a low family, such as a dog eater, he is so glorious that not only has he purified himself, but he is quite competent to deliver others, right? Because that's what he was saying in the verse. You know, your name appears, the outcast on the tip of whose name, tip of whose tongue your name appears, becomes the guru. How astonishing, right? So he's pointing it out that what glory there is in the Lord of just his name, one name can do this, you know, let alone, you know, as Prabhupada said, someone's chanting 24 hours, someone has seen the Lord, someone's an associate of the Lord, like that. He is competent to speak on the importance of the transcendental name, just as Thakur Haridas did. He was apparently born in a family of Mohammedans, but because he was chanting the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, Lord Chaitanya empowered him to become the authority or acharya of spreading the name. It did not matter that he was born in a family which was not following the Vedic rules and regulations. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Advaita Prabhu accepted him as an authority because he was offenselessly chanting of the name of the Lord. Authorities like Advaita Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya immediately accepted that he had already performed all kinds of austerities, studied the Vedas, and performed all sacrifices. That is automatically understood. Right? So means you're studying, okay, all kinds of austerities, because the point of doing your duties is to come to the point of doing them in connection with the Lord, right? And of all austerities, then chanting the holy name is the best. Right? Manu mentions that. Of all duties of the Brahman, the chanting of the holy name, that's the most important. So even if he's not doing that and hasn't studied all the Vedas, he's still considered the best. Right? Studied the Vedas, right? And the Vedas are all discussing, as Lord Chaitanya says, about the Lord and about devotional service and about, you know, taking up that devotional service. That's the actual purpose. And performed all sacrifices, so all the sacrifices are there to be offered to the Lord to please the Lord. So that means the perfection of all that is being attained by the person who is chanting the holy name, right? So here is, you know, like that. So this doesn't mean, it means we see Haridas Thakur is the perfect example of one who is on that platform and, you know, has come to the pinnacle. So therefore he's the acharya. But we see this is also talking about that the chandala and just one name and they're already purified. We saw before all the karma is gone and everything like that. So we have to appreciate that the offenseless chanting, there's the end of one who's continuously offenselessly chanting. And that we will consider, yes, that person is properly situated in offenseless chanting. But we see is from the story in sixth canto of Ajamiya that he, you know, we know that he, there's basically in his day-to-day activities, lifestyle, values, everything, there's nothing good, right? He's nothing good. And so I have a chat catch him. He's chanting his son's name, but he's chanting offenselessly because he's not considering that the name is different from the Lord. He's not, you know, in other words, the consideration of the name, it's not there, you know, and he was attentive to chanting the name. He didn't, you know, at that moment, he wasn't thinking of it as Narayan's name. He was thinking of his son's name, but He's just chanted the name, and it was offenseless chanting. Therefore, like that. Now to be continuously chanting offenselessly, now that's a standard that we want to aspire to come to. But the point is just that one name does everything. So it's not that, oh no, but only if he's on this elevate, then it has some, that's just an attachment to karma. That's all. That's what it indicates. You know, if, of course, if someone is just saying, oh yeah, so it doesn't matter, we do anything because we're chanting, that's the eighth offense. And so then for that, yes, but it's supposed to be of quality, you know, without attachment, without, you know, attachment to karma and yon, you know, as Prabhupada mentioned before, you know, without any sense gratification or professional purpose to please the, and chanted to please the Lord. That's the standard. That's the consciousness of the devotee. But the power of the name is just you've chanted it without about committing offense at that moment you chant it, then it's good. Now to be continually not committing offenses, now that's the stage you want to get to. Right? Yeah. There's a hereditary class of brahmanas called the smarta brahmanas. However, who are brahmanas, however, who are of the opinion that even if such persons who are chanting the holy name of the Lord are accepted as purified, they still have to perform the Vedic rites or wait their next birth in a family of Brahmins so that they can perform the Vedic rituals, right? Because, no, they don't need to perform because they've already come to that platform of chanting the holy name of the Lord. They've already come to the pinnacle of doing all those things. That's why then with the Vaishnav society, especially the Gaudiya Vaishnav society, then those, you know, Vedic and Pancharatric activities that the Acharyas recommend, then that's what we do. But it's not that the more ritualistic it is and the more technical it is, the actual better it is. No, because it's the bhakti to perform all that nicely. Let's say you do the yajna and you do it very nicely. The attention to all detail, all arrangements and everything. It's the devotion which you're doing that to please Krishna that is giving the more benefit than if you just did something simple and you know, didn't pay so much attention. It's not that the more technical ritual is now giving you more benefit in devotion. No, it's the medium you use. It's just like, let's say I'm cooking. Now, let's say if I'm cooking and I'm just cooking something, you know, I'm not really worried about it. And so I don't pay so much attention. You know, I get something cooked and all that. And, you know, I'm offering it to Krishna and all. And so there's going to be the devotion. Now, let's say I do something a little bit more technical, right? Now, the tendency is when I do something more technical, I'm going to pay more attention. And because of that paying more attention, therefore, I will cook it more nicely for Krishna. So it's the attention and devotion that actually is the benefit, not that it's a more complex recipe. Because I remember, you know, you have a vegetable, let's say just like a simple cabbage, right? You just chop it up into, you know, small pieces and that. And, you know, not, yeah. And so then, and you do a chaunce, you know, a simple chaunce, you know, possibly even no foreign at all. Just, you know, the ginger chili or just the chili, no turmeric, just a little salt, but it's cooked very, you know, properly with attention. And I've seen that, you know, and it has the ghee in that. I've seen it come out to be fabulous taste. It's so simple and clear, the taste. But it's so nice. And then you have other recipes where there's 20 different spices and things within the preparation. And when they're all perfectly balanced, then it gives a one singular, very nice taste, you know? So the point is that attention to the detail, because the person who can do those 20 things nice, it can also do that very simple, because it's the attention and the balance that gets everything. So that's the devotion there. So it's not that the technicality. So that's the thing here is the what do you call those? Hereditary class of Brahmins. Then there, it's all about the technical because that's all they have. They're born in the Brahmin family. That's what makes them a Brahmin according to their idea. Right? So it's about the secondary aspects, you know, the situation you're born in, you know, the social standing you have and this and that, therefore you can do. But it's pointed out, no, the devotee doesn't have to do those things. He's already qualified. That's why Sridhar Swami in his commentary says they should respect it like a person who is on that level of performing the Vedic sacrifices, right? That's where they start. So then someone who's taken up the chanting, they're on that level. Say what you want. Yes, they're not necessarily trained in performing the sacrifices and that, but they're to be respected on that level because of their purity. So here is that even if the smartest do accept, okay, you have to accept that the holy name purifies because there'll be mention of it in the various scriptures, but they want to, you know, establish their own position as superior, you know, the social, economic position, the authority, so they can say, yes, okay, they're purified. And so that way you can accept them as saintly persons and sadhus and like that. And they're respected like that, but you can't say that they can do the sacrifices. That they have to wait till next life and next birth, born in a Brahmin family, then they can take it up and all that. So they might accept, okay, it's a holy name, so powerful, it'll bring them that next birth, they'll be born as a human, maybe, and born in a Brahmin family and all that. But no, it's the holy name's already done that. Now, if a person is inclined, now they can get trained. They have the second initiation, and they get trained in how to perform the sacrifice. Then they're doing the sacrifice, because anyway, the Brahmin, because he's born, he's not, wasn't born with he wasn't born with a silver yajna spoon in his hand. Yeah. So like that, he has to, you know, go through the samskars and be trained and all that. Then he can do. So it's the same with the devotee. It means they're starting on that same platform. But the devotee, where he starts, is at the purity of the Brahmin who has come to that position. He's been born in the Brahmin family, gone through the samskars, been trained, you know, in, you know, his brahmacharya and the Vedic rituals, you know, the knowledge of it and everything, and the expertise, you know, has been practiced and all that. And that purity has there, that's where the devotee starts. So that's why if they don't take it up, there's no big deal. So if the devotees don't know all the technical things of the puja and the yajnas and that, but they, you know, they go to the temple, take darshan of the Lord, attend the artiks, chant the holy name, then it doesn't matter. Or there's initiation, they sit there and appreciate, there's the kirtan, the talk, you know, the glory of more individuals, taking up seriously the bhajana kriya of Krishna consciousness. And they're there for that spiritual association. They don't need to perform the ritual like that. There's an advantage that yes, the devotees can do all these things like that. And we want to avoid that, oh, you know, it should be, you know, those born in Brahmin families as devotees, only they should do and stuff like that. Then you're just bringing back into the mundane, you know, ideas, you know, cat and a dive, wherever you have that, right? Like that. Yeah. But actually, this is not a case. Such a man does not need to wait for the next birth to become purified. He is already purified by chanting. He is at once purified. It is understood that he has already performed all sorts of rites. It is the so-called brahmanas who actually have to undergo different kinds of austerities before reaching the point of purification, right? And in other words, they're saying, no, you have to come to, by chanting, you got purified, we can do what we're doing. But actually is that they've been purified to a state that now they can do those things, that if they keep doing that at some point in their sojourn in the material world, then they may come to the point where they can take up chanting of the holy name. Right? There are many other Vedic performances which are not described here. All such Vedic rituals have been already performed by the chanters of the holy name, right? So here's that one chant, but here, you know, you get the ideas that it's talking about, one, the quality of the name. One name can chant, can do all these wonderful things. At the same time as then those who are situated in, you know, regular chanting of the holy name, they're then the ones that are going to be especially noted and appreciated for their standard of Krishna, of purification. The word juhu vuhu means that the chanters of the holy name have already performed all kinds of sacrifices, right? Juhu vuhu, because you have in the yajna, you have the shruva, and you also have the druva, and I think it's the juhu. It's one of the special spoons there, the juhu. Then that means that you're doing very, technical and that kind of worship where you, even the differences in the spoons on what you're offering, they have different shapes and made of different wood, all that can eat different mantras. So, that means when you say that means you've done everything. It's just like, let's say if someone can cook, like a cauliflower paneer, potato, peas, dalna, with all the nice, with all the garam masalas and everything like that. And then that means they could cook a simple sabji. It's already included. You can cook that. All the techniques are there. Every kind of addition of spice and every technique is used in making that preparation. So it means you know all the elements of cooking, right? So that's the point. The point is that the word juvahu means the chanters of the holy have already performed all kinds of sacrifice. It means they've done it all. They've come to shashnuhu means that they have already traveled to all the holy places of pilgrimage and taken part in purificatory activities at those places. They'll go there, they'll take bath, they'll give cows in charity, worship the brahmanas, perform fasting or some special pujas, and to the holy place itself, to the deities that are there, and all those things. He's done all that. They are called Aryaha because they have already finished all these requirements, and therefore they must be among the Aryans, or those who have qualified themselves to become Aryans. Quote unquote, Aryan refers to those who are civilized, whose manners are regulated according to the Vedic rituals, right? So that's the whole point, is Aryan. So that's why one avoids being, having difficulties with the Vedic culture and processes as given by the acharyas. Yes, you may make comments that the smartas and the shaktas and the shaivites and, the regular general population might be overemphasizing certain areas or doing things that are not actually that necessary for the devotee. Yes, that comment is there because they're doing it for karma gyan. But for those recommended by the acharyas and the way of the culture and all that, one would not be against it, right? Because the point is Aryan, who is Aryaha, that was the Aryan, then refers to those who are civilized, right? Whose manners are regulated according to the Vedic rituals. Right, so there, and the Vedic rituals for us predominantly is going to be Pancharatra, which means the holy name chanting, of course, and then the Pancharatra, and then of Pancharatra, those five direct activities of, worshiping the deity, chanting the holy name, associating with the devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, living in the Dham. These activities are going to be the prominent. So they've regulated their life according to the Vedic rituals, this. And so then, because that's agama, it comes from the Veda. And then going back into the more smarta and those kind of things, then unless it's recommended, like samskars, the marriage ceremony, it's not necessary for us, right? Like that. Because even for us, our daily yajnas and that we do are all part of the Pancharatrik system. It's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto. When Krishna explains deity worship to Uddhava, then after having finished, the other 15 items and all that, then the 16th item, one of the elements of the 16th item, along with, chanting the mantras and japas for the Lord and prayers, is performance of yajna. So that's where our yajna fits in. And when it's samskaras, then that's connected with. That's Vedic, but that's given to us by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, you know, or they'll be again extended with Pancharatra, you know, installing deities or a temple or other things like that. Then those kind of yajnas and rituals, you know, the Abhishek that's given by Srila Rupa Goswami. So they've given what rituals and techniques that we need. And more than that, we understand them. We know where they fit into the society, but we already know that the holy, by chanting, it's already taken care of. But that doesn't mean you ignore what the acharyas have given you as far as culture and behavior and manners, and just stick to one's own purva samskar and that, and avoid you know, coming up to a more, you know, human position, you know, as far as religion goes. Any devotee who is chanting the holy name of the Lord is the best kind of Aryan. Unless one studies the Vedas, one cannot become an Arya. So it doesn't mean, even despite that, like Prabhupada said before, they don't know the rituals, they don't know all these different things, they don't know the importance. That doesn't matter. The holy name has effect and they're getting purified. But what we're meaning is that when they do come in contact with it, that they shouldn't be, you know, neglectful of it. You know, whatever is proper for them and their position, they should be involved. So it's a difference between new devotees. They don't know all these things, but they're just happy to chant and associate devotees, worship the deity, do some service, and that, and they're happy. It's defenseless, and they're going on like that. But when they come in contact with, yes, there's different things that you need to do that are just considered, you know, cultured, then they don't know. We only chant Hare Krishna and all that kind of thing. So, yeah. So they've understood all the Vedic literature. That's why we stick to, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. It means it's already the essence of all the Vedic literature. And then those books surrounding Srimad Bhagavatam. We say Srimad Bhagavatam means Srimad Bhagavatam, and those works in pursuit of the understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita that we're studying will be from the mood and angle of how Srimad Bhagavatam approaches, you know, means the philosophy explained in Gita, right? So it's not this bringing you to Naishkarmya, it's bringing you to pure and alert devotion or service, right? As we see as even the first canto of Bhagavatam, then we see that Sutta Goswami has explained, you know, all, because they're talking about how did they get to this position. But Vyasadeva has explained, included that part of the conversation, because then now you see the actual angle from which you understand Mahabharata. So those stories that are in Bhagavatam, how the devotees are interacting with the Lord, and that, like Queen Kunti's prayers are there, you know, so many nice things are there. That's how you approach and understand the Mahabharata, because the Mahabharata is the summary study of all the Vedic literatures, but more from the religious side than understanding the aspect of pure devotion. You know, the sad dharma. Dharma is nicely given, you know, your fundamental philosophy, but not necessarily going into sad dharma, and therefore the extension of, you know, devotion and understanding of tattva that's offered, right? So then Bhagavatam then is the conclusion of the conclusion. And so then all these nectar of devotion, all these other things, then Chaitanya Charitamrita is just an advanced study of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? It's about the lives of Lord Chaitanya and those devotees who their book is Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Okay. The specific word used here is anuchuhu, which means that because they have already completed all those recommended acts, they become qualified to be spiritual masters. Anuchahu, so that comes that word anuchana, that Narad Muni is known as anuchana, means that he studied all the scriptures, he's understood the conclusions and see how they all connect together. It's not that, okay, he knows this and he knows that and he can't see how they connect. He sees it all as, it's all as Krishna consciousness. And how you know, so all things are in Krishna, everything. He sees that, all that, right? So that's the anuchahu, right? Be spiritual masters. Here, spiritual masters doesn't specifically mean diksha guru, not that they couldn't be, but it means that they understand the Vedic literature, right? And so the purpose of the Vedic literature, they studied all that, is bhakti. So spiritual master means they can train one in bhakti, explain bhakti, like it said Haridas Thakur. Then Lord Chaitanya and Advaita Prabhu then accepted him as the authority to explain the chanting of the holy name. That's what it means. So Haridas Thakur is the guru for everybody when it comes to the holy name. But we're not, you know, who's got diksha from Haridas Thakur, right? So we always have to see is that the context of here, spiritual master in this context, is talking about the siksha aspect. And that, and then when it's talking like before, we saw is that the spiritual master sees the qualification of the disciples before offering him the second initiation or second birth. That then we're talking about the Diksha Guru. But that same principle, all other, you know, preachers of that are trying to elevate one to that platform. And once you get to that platform, because that's Bhajana Kriya, then one keeps going. You still have another five stages to go to get to prema. The very word grinati, which is used in this verse, means to be already established in the perfectional stage of ritualistic performances. If one is seated on the bench of a high court and is giving judgment on cases, it means that he has already passed all legal exams and is better than those who are engaged in the study of law or those expecting to study law in the future. In a similar way, persons who are chanting the holy name are transcendental to those who are factually performing the Vedic rituals and those who expect to be qualified, or in other words, those who are born in families of brahmanas, but have not yet undergone the reformatory processes and who therefore expect to study the Vedic rituals and perform the sacrifices in the future, right? So Prabhupada's pointing out is that those who expect, because you have to take it all the way back, those who are doing and those who are expecting to be doing in the future. So that means the qualified Brahmin, you know, the Vipra, and someone born in the family and who has the plan to study and come to that point of being a Vipra. Right. So he's already passed. He's transcendental because the Vipra is still in the material platform. It may be the best. It's the mode of goodness. It's the top position, but it's still not transcendental unless that is being done to please Krishna. Right. So that's important. And so then, yeah. And then once one comes to that point to do everything to please Krishna, he may or may not be engaged in the ritualistic activities like we see Haridas Thakur wasn't, but other Brahmin devotees, you know, then, you know, from their background of being Brahmins, then they would perform their different things like we see Advaitacharya. Then he is performing all these things as the leading Brahmin in Shantipur. But it's not that he has faith in that those rituals are what's going to make it. It's that the devotion to Krishna, because we have to remember as Maha, how do you say? Mahavishnu. Then, his breath, him breathing out, is the Vedas. So it's not that he needs to do all that to perfect himself. No, it's the devotion to Krishna that he's interested in. So even as Mahavishnu, he's worshiping, how you say, Sankarsana, who's then, you know, part of Vasudev, part of Mahanarayan, part of Balaram, and then who is expanding from Krishna. So he's worshiping Krishna. That's what's important to him as Mahavishnu. So we have to appreciate the, you know, how the example works. Right? There are many Vedic statements in different places saying that anyone who chants the holy name of the Lord becomes immediately freed from conditional life, that anyone who hears the holy name of the Lord, even though born in a family of dog eaters, also becomes liberated from the clutches of material entanglement. Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam. So one who chants or one who hears, then they are freed from the clutches of material entanglement, right? Srimad Bhagavatam 333.7 purport, right? So that was the verse that we just discussed. It means that was we started with. Yeah, 333.7. Okay. Then the Acharya continues. Svadaha means a class of people who eat dogs. In the present tense, it refers to a person with such a nature, his present karma. Right? So he's saying in the present tense, it means with such a nature, his present karma. It doesn't necessarily mean that he is eating dogs. But the point is he has that particular nature of those who would. For a person who on some occasion ate a dog, there is atonement, and the past tense would be used, right? Because he ate a dog. But swadaha means who eat dogs. It means it's an ongoing, means he has the mentality he could eat dogs. He may be eating, he may only have the mentality. So that's why in the Manu is explaining that the chandala means we know it as the dog eater, but there's a mentality of the dog eater. It's not specifically the eating dog that makes them dog eater, because he says on some occasion ate a dog. There's atonement, and the past tense would be used. So you wouldn't say, you know, oh yes, he's a dog eater, but it would be based on that principle of, you know, because he has a higher mentality, and for some reason or another, however it's come about. But then we see here, you know, just let's say if it's before becoming a devotee, it's due to some offense in previous life, you know, in this life is something happened, you don't know how all these things happen. But the point being is that he, it's the past tense that's used. So then in Manu, when it's talking about the chandala, it is the combination where you have, means it's a pratiloma combination of a Shudra father and a Brahman mother, right? So it's 4 degrees difference, right? 4 degrees, I'll say 3 degrees if you're counting. Yeah, but whatever it is, it's the maximum difference you can get like that. But it's not like the Analoma, right? The Analoma where you have a Brahman father and a Shudra mother, then you get a Nishada, right? But then if it's reversed, so it's even worse, that's called a chandala. So they're going to be, father is a Shudra, so that's going to be their spirit. It's a Shudra spirit, but the mother is Brahman. They'll have that kind of nature. But they're going to view the brahminical activities from the perspective of a Shudra. So that means it's so much trouble is there. Well, the other way is their nature of a Shudra, but they have a spirit of a Brahman. So they'll kind of see it in a, you know, trying to do it in a higher way. Though they'll have the nature to do these things. Right? So it would appear possibly the chandala is in a better position, but at the same time as he only uses brahminical things for Shudra stuff, while the other uses Shudra stuff, tries to connect it to brahminical things. Right? And then when I think you mix that a bit, you mix those. So then of that, then you have a chandala father and a nishada mother. Now you get something really bad. Such usage would be opposed to the maxim that conventional usage, a low-class person, prevails over etymological meaning, literally a dog eater, as explained above, right? So you have the conventional and the etymological. So the etymological is something that's used that you know the root, but you have to have conventional how it's used. That's why the problem in logic and argumentation, you get the aspect of where someone is making a point in the discussion. They're trying to establish their point. They're giving an example, or they're giving reasoning like this. And then the opposing party takes what they said and takes the word out of context of what they're saying. In other words, they're using it according to conventional meaning. And then they take it out of that context by going into the etymology of the word or a synonym of the word or some other aspect that you could use for the word. You know, it's just like, let's say, Mataji, right? So Mataji, G means respectable, and Mataji means, you know, basically, oh, respectable, you know, mother, like that. But then I've heard it said, some will make the comment that, no, but what you're actually doing is, you know, if you call someone like in at least in America, if you have someone is, you know, kind of low class in their discussions and perspectives, and you call somebody a mother, that means it's a derogatory term, right? So they're then using it that it means that, and so therefore they're criticizing us and insulting us by calling us Mataji, you know, or Mata. So therefore, you know, we should be called Prabhus. So like this, you know, right? So that's then, you know, what the Acharya is talking about here. We're not applying it in conventional usage. We're trying to use our own. And that here, that etymological, that's going back to Malecha and Yavana, you know, etymology. That's not going back to what it actually even means. But, you know, they're using it for their own particular political purpose. So that's the meaning here, is that the conventional use, especially if conventional by the Acharyas and the great personalities, they're using it in that way, then that's to be accepted, as opposed to going down to the etymological and then trying to find, you know, the root. And it could, because the root is the root of, there's 2,000 roots for all words. That means one root can have so many different derivatives, right? And so you can't take an alternative derivative. You use the conventional usage that of the so many derivatives that you can get from this one root, that, you know, you could come up with so many, a myriad of meanings, but no, you use the one that the Acharyas have used. What's the convention? So for us, conventional means what the Acharyas, conventional doesn't mean, you know, what goes on in the Senate, you know. This is how sages explain the word, right? So the sages say it that way, we accept them, right? Stavana means a soma sacrifice. From one anga of bhakti, such as hearing the Lord's name, immediately the prarabdha sin which produced his low birth, unfavorable for sacrifice, is destroyed, though other qualities are also necessary for performing the sacrifice, right? So he's pointing out as the sin that makes him unqualified to perform it, that's gone. But now, you know, some technical training and other things are required, or qualities. I mean, he's from a dog eater background. You know, they're saying here, means in other words, a low class background. But you have to see what's underneath that. Just like, okay, I drop a shoe in the mud, and I drop, let's say, a gold ornament in the mud. Now, when you pick them up, they both look like mud. And so that's the conventional point, conventional usage here. Is meaning about the swadaha, means the low class person, right? Now, when I wash off that mud, which means when they chant the holy name, then you see what usage you'll use it for. So one you'll use as a shoe, and one you use as an ornament, right? So that's the thing, is then when you see they're purified, then you're going to see what is the qualification, what's the nature that they're going to engage in Krishna service, right? So nature doesn't change. Yes, we have that, but it doesn't mean it can't be covered due to, you know, offensive bad behavior, bad association. So it's a matter of that purification and getting adjusted to that, means the consciousness starts to awaken. Then you start to see how they behave. And according to that, that's what they do. That's why, yeah. So that's then how the process will work. The Lord also says to Uddhava, Bhaktyaham ekaya grahyaha grahyas shradhayatma priyas satam bhakti punati man nishta swapakan api sambhavat. Only by bhakti, performed with full faith, can the devotees attain me, Paramatma, the object of love. Right, Prabhupada mentions here the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the object of love means Bhagavan, right? Bhakti fixed in me purifies even a dog hater of his low birth. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14:21, Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Are we doing the time? The word yata in the previous verse may include to some people that other processes also lead to attainment of the Lord, though they are not as effective. This verse counters that idea. Reagan says, okay, karma and jnana will get you there. It'll take a little longer than that. But he's saying, no, this verse counters that. Because it's not that they're actually giving. It's the bhakti within them that's progressing you forward. Karma, you have to perform bhakti. Jnana, you have to perform bhakti to make it work, just like your toaster and oven or refrigerator need electricity to work. They don't work on their own. So that working principle in action in the material world, the Abhideya, is actually bhakti. And so that's what's elevating you. Karma and jnana, their ritual of taking, you know, one mundane thing and doing something else with it, you know, like this, putting this on top or putting this here, you know, or opening this and trying to stick this inside, but it won't close because it's too big. You know, that's not what gets you. It's the devotion you do that purifies you, with which you're doing something. That's the principle. So this verse Kadiya, I am obtained by bhakti alone, ekaya, not by any by the other processes. It's only bhakti. Though it is heard that by jnana one can attain Brahman, it should be understood that the secondary bhakti within jnana gives the attainment of Brahman, right? So bhakti, because bhakti in jnana or karma is secondary because that's how they're viewed, right? So it's just called, and it's not about bhakti at all or devotion to the Lord, but it's just you're accepted as part of the ritual. It's just called karma or jnana. When you see those in connection with the Lord, then that's called jnana yoga, right? And now if you're doing that, you're using that karma, those activities of karma and jnana simply to please the Lord is karma yoga, then it's called pure devotional service. And if you're the karma and jnana is being used in the Lord's service, but there's some mix of interests in the results of those things, that's called, you know, karma misra bhakti or jnana misra bhakti. You know, that's the point. But the point is it's the bhakti that makes it happen, not anything else. Karma and jnana, they're dead matter. You're working with dead matter. The body's dead matter. The ritual's the dead matter. Everything you're doing is dead matter. Well, what's it going to give you? So it's the bhakti within that actually gives anything. They are useful only in destroying sin, right? Right. So because you've done it with that, the power of bhakti, then through that ritual, what you've done, then that sin is destroyed. But they are not even as powerful as destroying sin as bhakti is. Right? This is expressed in the last two lines of the verse. Bhakti purifies the dog eater of his low birth, sambhavat. Right? So we're saying, is there only useful in destroying sin? So karma and jnana, you know, that you're performing properly, you know, then it has to have that element of bhakti. That will only destroy sin. It can't give you bhakti. Like when Krishna says ekaya, means only bhakti will give you, right? So one has to understand what's the primary, what's the secondary. So in karma and jnana are the primary, bhakti is the secondary. But when Krishna says ekaya, it means bhakti is the primary and karma and jnana are engaged as are useful in Krishna's service. Right? Bhakti purified a dog eater of his low birth, sambhavat. This is the meaning given by Sridhar Swami. This means that bhakti destroys the prarabdha sins, effects of karma, destined to be experienced in this life. Sarnartha Darshani 11:14:21. Yeah. If this takes place for the dog eater, what can be said for other persons? However, right. So in other words, we're just saying this to show the power of the holy name. So what to speak of those who are dedicated their lives to the chanting of the holy name or preaching the glories of the holy name? Their position is so much more glorious. It means it's the chandala, just by one chanting, has been purified of these parabdha karma. So what about those who have dedicated their lives? It's going to be so much more. So we see that this kind of point is being made many times. You see that in Bhagavatam and that. Nard Muni also makes it. That's the... Someone who approaches the Lord and is focused on the Lord, meditating in the Lord, even in envy and hate and all these other things, like, you know, gives example of Shishupala or Dantavakra or other these persons, or Kamsa, or the demons in Vrindavan, you know, Putana and everything like that, they get purified. Let alone, I mean, so what to speak of those who actually are doing their activities with affection, right? So that's the whole point, is it's so glorious that on its own, it's so wonderful. Then when you apply it into the individual. So in other words, the position of bhakti is so glorious. And so therefore we're looking at it. We're talking about the identity. The identity of the person born in the Brahman or the Chandala family. But then you talk about the individuality of in the person, and how they themselves have committed themselves to the chanting of the holy name. That then becomes such a more glorious position, right? Just it's so the one is already glorious. So it's like, how you say, Vaikuntha is glorious, right? You know, Dwarka is glorious, and then Mathura will be more glorious, but Vrindavan is most glorious. So all this can be all there at once. So therefore, the Chandala chanting once is glorious, but then someone who's dedicated themselves to the chanting of the holy is even more glorious, right? It's just, it becomes greater and greater. It's greater perfection within perfection, right? How in this verse the qualification is just the destruction of the Prarabdha Karma? However, in this verse, the qualification is just the destruction of the Prarabdha Karma, which made the person a dog eater, right? In order to perform the Soma sacrifice, there's the necessity of other qualities as well. Though a young Brahmin is qualified by his physical birth, his performance of sacrifice depends on Savitara Diksha. But that second birth, by that second birth, he learns proper conduct and rules. His birth alone does not allow him to perform sacrifice. Thus, the former dog eater is to be worshipped like a performer of sacrifice, but does not perform sacrifices. This is Sridhar Swami's explanation. In any case, it is clear by removing the fault of low birth, Prarabdha Karma was destroyed. So that's the point you're getting back to, is that the Prarabdha Karma was destroyed. That's what you're bringing out. You know. Okay, the commentary on the second verse says, quote, the first verse is explained. Aho bhata indicates astonishment. On whose tongues, even a dog eater, exists your name? Or because your name exists on their tongues, those persons have performed all austerities. Austerity and other things mentioned are included in chanting your name. Thus, these people are most pure, unquote. The Lord says to, so the commentary, that means this is Sridhar Swami, right? The Lord says to Uddhava that bhakti purifies the dog eater, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. Clearly, Prarabdha Karma is destroyed by bhakti, since the fault of low birth has been destroyed. So the fault of low birth, so now they take up and perform devotional service and all that, then that's fine. So we see is that for the devotee, then whatever birth they've taken, then that's fine for them. You know, it means, you know, once they've taken up devotional service, it doesn't matter. They will engage in a service that matches their abilities and like that. But they know it's not the particular service that's being offered. Therefore, we see as previously, you know, devotees like Haridas Thakur and others, they may, they have no need to perform all the, you know, Vedic rituals and all those things because they have faith in the holy name. They don't require. They've already done all those things in previous life. Now, by the Krishna's grace, they're able to chant the holy name in this life. So they don't have to. And socially, people are have a difficulty with it anyway. So, you know, why create trouble, right? Because we saw at the time, and the culture is going on nicely and everything. So the religion is going on well, though there's, you know, natural misunderstandings, but at least, you know, the basics are there. But as we see, as we come, especially when we come, or you have those who are more serious about it, then we see is that, you know, the more strong preaching is there, like you see with Narad Muni and Maharaj Prachina Barhishat. You know, he's established nicely as following the Karmakandi Brahmas, but he's pointing out that this is not going to get you anything. You have to take up pure bhakti. That's the actual point. So then he's talking very directly. And he's one who's following nicely the Vedic culture. You know, But then we see with Bhakti Vinod Thakur that, you can say Rupa Goswami, you could say started because he went to Delhi first, you know, and then, you know, at Akbar's court to discuss the glories of the Jamuna, because there was a discussion, is the Jamuna or the Ganga more pure? So then no one could answer, none of the court pundits. So then someone mentioned Rupa Goswami would know, so they brought him. And I'm not sure if it was a painting or if it's an etching or a carving of Rupa Goswami in, you know, one of those courts or in the palace on one of the pillars as he sat there and explained things, you know, in the court. And so that picture is there. So, you know, he was the first to go and preach to them, you could say. You know, I mean, you ought to see all through history, there's always, you know, varieties of wild people like Dasarath Nakar and Magrari the hunter. But they were just on the low ends of Vedic culture. They didn't, you know, get into, they weren't very pure in that, but they didn't necessarily oppose the culture itself. But we see with the Mughals, then they oppose the culture, right? And then, as we see with Bhakti Vinod Thakur, then it becomes even more that now that, you know, the British have come in and westernizing the Indian community and like that. And then with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that's more pronounced than Srila Prabhupada. So then and there with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, with Bhakti Vinod Thakur, then, you know, you make the point, but they wouldn't disturb the system. With Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, systems become degraded enough and people are distracted by the Western thought enough that he takes it as a preaching element that no, those who have come from these backgrounds, whatever it may be, by chanting, they qualify for sacrifice. And then if they have the nature to perform it, you know, they have that kind of qualification that by training and that, then they could perform these things in a proper way. Then they would, and they would have the sacred thread. They would have all these markings that, you know, people should respect them on that way. So it's not even just they respect them as sadhus, but they actually respect that they are doing these things, right? So that's the whole point, is the fault of low birth has been destroyed. So then if it's a matter of it's favorable, you can take these things up. And if it's, you know, not important, then it doesn't matter. You're just engaged in chanting the holy name. Bhakti also destroys sickness because caused by Prarabdha Karma. Adhayo Vyadhayo Yasya Smaranan Nama Kirtanat Tad Eva Vilayam Yanti Tam Anantam Namamyaham. I offer respects to the unlimited Lord. By remembering him or chanting his name, mental and physical affliction is destroyed, Skanda Purana. Right, so that's also Prarabdha Karma. But we're not chanting because it gets rid of, it qualifies us for this or that, or it gets rid of the disease or mental problem. It just means that just comes from the chanting. We're chanting to please Krishna. And as a side effect, it takes care of these things. Prarabdha Papa Haratvam Cha Kvachit Upa Sakke Cha Vasat. By the desire of the worshipper, Prarabdha Karmas are sometimes destroyed. Nama Kaumudi. The previous one was Skanda Purana. But so the desire means they may not be. You know, it may be just you don't worry about it, you just chant and do things like that, and then if it goes away, nice, and if it doesn't, it doesn't matter, or if it's a disturbance, then, you know, one may desire that, like it says in the Bhagavatam, the only thing that a pure devotee might desire is, you know, good, you know, his health is good enough to do his service, right? He's not, you know, wanting to be, you know, Captain America or something. He just wants to, you know, be able to, you know, chant and do his simple, you know, his sadhana and service that he does, like that. Devahuti spoke thus, right? So then she's the one that's speaking this, you know, amazement at the glory of the holy name. How astonishing, right? So that means that was Devahuti. Okay, so then we'll end here for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.